From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, there are calls in Albany for a special prosecutor to investigate police encounters with unarmed civilians. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the potential for a legislative pay raise in exchange for ethics reform, and a Northern New York district attorney plans to buy body cameras for law enforcement agencies. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. There are growing calls in Albany for a special prosecutor to investigate police encounters with unarmed citizens that end in the death of the person. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, Senate Democrats are the latest to ask for immediate action in the wake of the death of Eric Garner and other recent incidents.
The state's attorney general has already asked Governor Cuomo for an executive order to empower the AG to investigate and, if warranted, prosecute cases where unarmed civilians are killed by police officers. Cuomo's spokesperson has said the governor is reviewing AG Schneiderman's request as the governor considers a complete overhaul of the system. Now, the leader of the Senate Democrats has a bill to create an Office of Special Investigation inside the AG's office. It would automatically review and possibly probe police incidents where an unarmed citizen is killed. The office would also accept petitions from New Yorkers to initiate other investigations as well. Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the governor should also include $75 million in the new state budget for body cameras for police. She says people have lost trust in the system and big changes need to be made.
In this case, we watched a man killed on camera, and yet a grand jury decided that no criminal trial should even be held. It's very disturbing and, frankly, really highlights the need for reforms.
Senator Stewart-Cousins is the only African-American legislative leader, and the Senate Democrats have the largest number of blacks and Latinos in the Senate. Many spoke of the distress that they feel for their own children, who are questioning what happened in the Garner case and others. Senator Jesse Hamilton of Brooklyn was newly elected to the Senate in November. He says he watched the Garner case unfold on television with his 11-year-old son.
And he was saying, "Daddy, how can this happen in America? How could a man be murdered by the people who are being paid to keep him safe? And Daddy, as a new legislature, what are you going to do to take steps this doesn't happen again?"
Incoming Senator Mark Panapinto of Buffalo says a young man in his district was shot by the police and permanently paralyzed. He says his 13-year-old daughter has also been reacting to the news by participating in protests.
They shut down 3 blocks of traffic, and she said, "Dad, I'm laying down in the street. My friends and I are doing that because we're appalled by what happened." And she said, "What are you going to do about it? You ran for Senate. What are you going to do about it?"
Senate Democrats, however, will not be in power when the new session begins in January and will face challenges in getting their agenda passed into law. Republicans won more seats in the election, and some GOP senators have already objected to making major changes to the criminal justice system. There's also been talk of holding a special session in December to raise lawmakers' pay and possibly reform a troubled daily stipend system for legislators. Senator Stewart-Cousins refused to give her personal opinion on whether she wants a raise, saying she's discussing it with her conference, but she says she doesn't do her job for the money.
"It's not what gets me here every day."
The base salary for lawmakers is $79,500 a year, but legislative leaders earn more, closer to $100,000 a year. Senator Stewart-Cousins says if a special session is held, it should, as a first priority, address the state's criminal justice problems. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Now, Alan, the issue of police and unarmed civilians, we've been seeing, and in New York now, the Democrats in the state Senate are advocating legislation to establish a special state prosecutor to investigate deaths caused by police. The 17 current and newly elected senators say they back the proposed Office of Special Investigation, which would be housed within the state attorney general's office.
Well, it's interesting because you saw that the attorney general asked the governor for the power to do that. And the governor, who I thought might actually have been negotiating with the attorney general before the letter, took his time in doing this. Now the state Senate comes along. State Senate is very representative of the population of New York. I'm talking about the state Senate Democrats. And they've come along and they have said, we've got to do this. We've got to make sure that every citizen gets their rights and that nobody's picked on. And we need a special prosecutor to do this. And you know all of the reasons, including the fact that, grand juries and district attorneys and police are often very close. So, look, this has been a terrible spate of incidents. The Garner one is particularly troubling. And when it gets onto videotape, there's no putting that genie back in the bottle. I think the Senate Democrats are correct in calling for this independent prosecutor. I doubt very much you're going to see it happen.
State lawmakers, and I see a headline here, eyeing a raise, Albany lawmakers are negotiating reforms with Cuomo, and that's ethics reforms.
Yeah. Well, right from the very beginning, you and I have been talking about what it would take for the governor to agree to a pay raise for legislators. And I'm telling you, those legislators want that pay raise. And that's how George Pataki got charter schools. He traded them the charter schools for the pay raise. Otherwise, I think the assembly would have been loath to go along. But in the end, that pay raise trumped everything. So I've been racking my brain to figure out what it is that he could get. And of course, if he doesn't run for a third term, he's going to be defined as to whether he cleaned up Albany. He said he wanted to clean up Albany. He's gotten ethics reform a couple of times now, but it's turned out not to be much. It was a little bit, it looked like you could fool some of the people some of the time. Now, the question is what he will get in order to trade a pay raise. So will it be campaign financing? Will it be that they have to tell you exactly how much money they get every time from the outside? Will it be restrictions on that kind of money? We'll see. So far, his track record is not good. He says he's getting reform, but he doesn't get it. This time, if he gets it, and it's just more than an appearance, that'll be something.
Well, state lawmakers, and I see a headline here, eyeing a raise, Albany lawmakers are negotiating reforms with Cuomo, and that's ethics reforms.
Yeah. Well, right from the very beginning, you and I have been talking about what it would take for the governor to agree to a pay raise for legislators. And I'm telling you, those legislators want that pay raise. And that's how George Pataki got charter schools. He traded them the charter schools for the pay raise. Otherwise, I think the assembly would have been loath to go along. But in the end, that pay raise trumped everything. So I've been racking my brain to figure out what it is that he could get. And of course, if he doesn't run for a third term, he's going to be defined as to whether he cleaned up Albany. He said he wanted to clean up Albany. He's gotten ethics reform a couple of times now, but it's turned out not to be much. It was a little bit, it looked like you could fool some of the people some of the time. Now, the question is what he will get in order to trade a pay raise. So will it be campaign financing? Will it be that they have to tell you exactly how much money they get every time from the outside? Will it be restrictions on that kind of money? We'll see. So far, his track record is not good. He says he's getting reform, but he doesn't get it. This time, if he gets it, and it's just more than an appearance, that'll be something.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino. President Obama's call to equip police officers across the country with body cameras could change the way police interact with civilians, including those accused of breaking the law. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now, some experts say more study is needed before police agencies will know how beneficial body cameras can be and what the impacts really are.
Some believe body cameras will impede police work. If officers have concerns about what video will reveal, they may make fewer arrests and could choose to avoid some situations altogether. And that's before opening a Pandora's box of legal and ethical issues, including how videos would be processed, stored, and retrieved, not to mention whether the recordings would be made public and who would have access. Camera systems are expensive. There is also a learning curve and maintaining the equipment to consider. Donald Kelly, a partner in the law firm Tully Rinke PLLC, says police agencies would have to establish policies and procedures.
The standard everyday run-of-the-mill footage would be preserved over the course of time, much like you see, you know, at a department store where they have video cameras recording, but they record over each other like every, you know, month or so, every 25 days or so. Unless there's an incident, they don't see any reason to preserve the recording over the course of time.
Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno and Police Commissioner John Barbieri say they support having police cameras. In February, a Massachusetts State Labor Management Arbitration panel blocked the city from installing video cameras in police cruisers. An arbitration ruling in March continued the block until the completion of a joint study by the city and the union. Talbert Swan, president of the Springfield chapter of the NAACP, was critical of the ruling. He said video cameras in cruisers promote officer safety and public accountability.
Springfield is a little behind the times in terms of the advancement of this technology.
But if police are acting as human recorders, would the footage they gather really matter? Appearing on NBC's Today Show to discuss the roiling Eric Garner case, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo admitted, like every other American and New Yorker who saw the video of Garner being held in what became a fatal chokehold by a police officer, his instinct was, this is not right.
I'm sure if the justice system is working, that it's going to address this. And then it didn't. And I think what makes the Eric Garner case in some ways powerful is you had the video and you could watch the video. Now, technically, we don't know what was said in the grand jury room. We don't know what they heard. But in some ways, it doesn't matter. The perception is the problem.
Kelly labels the Garner incident an aberration and agrees with Cuomo it's hard to come to a logical conclusion without having access to the presentation to the grand jury that ended in no indictment. Outfitting police with body cameras could change the way police interact with civilians. Kelly anticipates the broader issue entails what protocol would be developed regarding camera use.
Whether it be a mandate to the individual officer that he has to wear a camera, whether he has the discretion to turn it off at times, and because oftentimes, you know, they are dealing with confidential informants and other people who they don't want to reveal their identity, who are helping them do their jobs, and who may not be as willing to help them if, in fact, they're being recorded. So I think that that's certainly an issue, and if the officers have the discretion to turn them off, then the cameras are essentially useless.
Alice Green is executive director of the Center for Law and Justice in Albany. She says police have their own culture where they protect one another.
And if they don't know they're being taped or watched, that they will, you know, resort to sometimes very questionable tactics in terms of how they deal with people. That's one of the reasons why people are now calling for body cams in hopes that that might stem the problem. But we're also concerned that, you know, after seeing the Garner tapes and the video, it certainly suggests that that's not the answer, because you have a video, a very clear video in the Garner case, and it didn't seem to make any difference.
Green believes body cameras could become a means to change individual officers' behavior.
It could be helpful in some situations. There are a lot of issues to be worked out to effectively use body cams. There are a lot of issues around how you use the technology. How do you protect people's privacy with police officers having this tool?
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Meanwhile, a Northern New York District Attorney plans to buy body cameras for law enforcement agencies in his county before he leaves office at the end of the month. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
Franklin County District Attorney Derek Champagne begins a new job as family court judge next year. Before he leaves his current position, he plans to use asset seizure funds to pay for body cameras for police officers across the county.
Saranac Lake and Malone already have them. In Tupper Lake and tribal police have some. I just don't know if they have enough for every officer. So my intent is to further outfit whatever local departments don't have them.
Champagne says the cameras are a safety tool that are as important in rural settings as they are in urban areas.
Unfortunately, our rural police officers see the exact same crimes that happen in the cities. I mean, they respond to robberies. They respond to domestics that could turn into homicides. They pull up to a vehicle and someone starts giving them a hard time. And, you know, it helps the officers. And the ones that we've had the luck with are not on for the entire shift. So, you know, it's not intrusive, and I think it's worth the try. And I think especially in my county, we've had departments that have had a lot of success with them. So why not try to help the departments that don't have funding or don't have money try to go ahead and get them?
Village of Tupper Lake Police Chief Eric Prue has been testing various cameras, assessing his budget, and researching the possibility of obtaining body cams for each of his officers.
For my small department, it was a great windfall for them to come forward because I had actually been looking into some type of program for my department long before his office called me to tell me that they were providing funding. And it also happened before Ferguson or New York City. With a budget as small as mine, I was going to use resources that I had in my equipment budget to purchase a few of them, and I was going to forego other equipment that I wanted to replace. But now that he's going to come forward with funding, hopefully I'll be able to use that funding to buy what I need.
Prue says his department may be small, but still sees the same crimes as any larger department. He wants the cameras for public and officer safety.
My main reason at looking at body cameras was to help see what my officers are doing on the street and also to help with any personnel complaints that I receive. And obviously, what's going on lately, there's a lot of scrutiny on law enforcement. When you're dealing with folks that are taking cell phone videos, a lot of times those videos are edited and it might not show the whole incident. With police body cameras, the whole incident will be recorded. I'm not getting the cameras to find my officers doing wrong. I'm hoping to look at this video and see they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing.
SUNY Plattsburgh Professor of Sociology Dr. Stephen Light is the author of the textbook Understanding Criminal Justice. He isn't surprised that body cameras are becoming a standard piece of equipment for police departments.
If technology exists, it will be used. So it doesn't surprise me to see officers wearing them. I don't think there's anything necessarily good or bad about a camera, as long as there are safeguards for privacy and confidentiality and to protect both the officers and suspects and the general public. That's the question. What kind of protections are there for everyone and how will the data be used?
District Attorney Champagne says he plans to distribute money to police departments by the end of the year for acquisition of the body cameras.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A legal back and forth has begun over letters sent to landowners along a proposed natural gas pipeline route in New York. The letters say there will be litigation if landowners do not allow the pipeline company access to rights of way. An attorney representing pipeline opponents has responded. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issued a December 2nd order, subject to a variety of conditions being met, for construction of Constitution Pipeline Company's proposed 124-mile natural gas pipeline from northeastern Pennsylvania to connect with existing transmission pipelines in Schoharie County, New York. One day later, letters from a law firm on behalf of the pipeline were FedExed to those landowners who have not signed easement agreements. Daniel Estrin, an attorney with the Pace Environmental Litigation Clinic in Westchester County, wrote back on behalf of opponents, Stop the Pipeline.
The day after the certificate was issued, you have the company sending these threatening letters out to dozens of landowners along the proposed route, essentially acting as if it's already a done deal, and they can now enter their land, whether the landowners want them to or not, begin surveying, and by the way, sign on the dotted line, or we're taking you to court. So we don't think that they have the power to do any of those things yet. They may ultimately get it, but this conditional certificate doesn't give it to them. And frankly, what they're trying to do is bully people.
The letters to landowners came from Philadelphia-headquartered law firm Saul Ewing. A request for comment from the law firm was referred to Constitution Pipeline Company spokesman Chris Stockton.
You know, we've been negotiating with landowners up and down the pipeline right away for nearly 3 years now, and you know, we have reached a point in the process where, you know, we need to communicate with landowners, you know, what milestones we've reached and kind of what the next steps are. So, yes, we did mail letters last week to some of those landowners who, you know, had previously received offers from us, but they have, you know, not been able to reach an agreement.
A letter says, quote, Constitution would like to reach an agreement with you and strongly prefers to avoid litigation. However, if you do not accept this final offer and execute the documents enclosed with the prior written offer from Constitution's representative by Thursday, December 11th, 2014, we will proceed to initiate suit under the Natural Gas Act, end quote. Again, Constitution Stockton.
There were some deadlines that were laid out, and you know, we've our objective is to move the project forward, and you know, we'll be working with landowners to hopefully reach an agreement soon, so we can begin construction in the first quarter of 2015.
He says Constitution has reached easement agreements with the majority of landowners affected by the pipeline project, amounting to less than 75%. Estrin is calling for Saul Ewing to retract the letter and says he will enter the legal fray on behalf of Stop the Pipeline landowners if Constitution files suit. Estrin says he also has concerns about FERC.
It's quite surprising to me that FERC is so aggressive about issuing these certificates before federally required prerequisites are met. So there are certain prerequisites in federal law that must be met before any federal license or permit is issued, and FERC somehow believes that it has some kind of exemption or something from that requirement.
A FERC spokesman says it is not unusual for the commission to grant a pipeline certificate subject to conditions. He adds that FERC, having granted the requested authority to build the pipeline subject to conditions, allows Constitution Pipeline to exercise eminent domain with those landowners who have not signed easement agreements. The proposed project to transport Marcellus Shale natural gas involves the construction of 124 miles of 30-inch diameter pipeline from Susquehanna County in Pennsylvania into New York's Broome, Shenango, and Delaware counties, terminating in Schoharie County.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1450. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustia.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.